Lesson 3 is on page 12. We're still talking about who's on the Lord's side. This is the general theme of the book. In this particular lesson, the title is Those Who Hide His Word in Their Hearts. People hide a lot of things. Sometimes they remember what they hide. Sometimes what people hide is not all that valuable. But the Bible talks about hiding God's word. A lot of the material tonight comes from the 119th Psalm. So if you'd like to turn back there and have that ready, we'll read several verses as we move through the material. And we've studied this at various times, maybe not the entire psalm in a series of lessons, but we've looked at many of the passages from this particular part of the Bible. And the writer rightly says that this psalm has many beautiful, thought-provoking things about God's Word, some of which we shall mention a little later. But to begin the lesson, let's look at verse 11. Somebody want to read it for us? It's in the text, but let's go ahead and have it read from the chapter as well. Psalm 119, verse 11. Okay. Okay, some of the words just stand out, so we had it read. We'll look at it in the book as well. Thy word. There are a lot of words in society, in life, but here we're talking about God's word, the most important word. And the writer says, who's hid it? I did. You know, it's good for someone else to do that. It's good for the preacher to do it. It's good for the elders to do it. It's good for the Bible class teachers and the deacons. But ultimately, it comes down to an individual decision. Have I? As an individual, have I chosen to put God's word where? In my heart. A lot of people will take God's word and put it where? Some will put it on the shelf. Some will put it into the lives of the children. Some will say, well, mom, dad, you know, work person, you need to do this. But it needs to be hidden in the individual's heart. And then the purpose is given in verse 11 as well. Why hide God's word in our heart? So that we might not sin. This is the purpose. There are obviously other purposes as well, but this is the purpose in Psalm 119, verse 11. We can say that the word is designed to strengthen us, to encourage us, to exhort us, but it's also designed to help keep us from sin. And he'll develop this point as we go through the material. Then he notes, to be on the Lord's side, one must have his word in the heart. The word of the Lord becomes the silent guide. Well, that's true, isn't it? When we think about actions every day, we're called on to make some kind of decision. Should we do this or should we not do this? Is this right or is this wrong? Everybody has a moral standard. Now, that may not come from God. It may not come from the Bible. But most people would say this is right and this is wrong. For example, you know, you walk up on a situation where a person is being beaten. And someone says, well, that's not right. Well, their rationale for that might be different than your basis for concluding that that's wrong. But in both cases, a person has made a value judgment. The Christian has said that's wrong. The person who walks up on the beating also says that that's wrong. And when we think about, you know, going through life, we need that guide. And if we don't have God's word where? In our heart. We're going to have some other kind of guide. And then he mentions we want it to be the silent guide to every action of the heart. And it needs to be deeply embedded there. So if this is true, and it is, for this to really work, when should we start trying to put God's word in our heart and life? All right. And we've got a Cradle Roll class here trying to go ahead and reach people as early as possible so that that information is put into their hearts, into their minds, into their lives, and then they can begin to use that and make decisions as they go through life. We can become a Christian when we're 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, or 100, but it becomes a lot more difficult as the years go by. Anything you want to add or ask over the first paragraph? Scott?
When you use the word like hide or hidden, the word in your heart, like we're supposed to share the word. I mean, is there like another sense of like the word hidden that they're using?
Yes, it's not hidden in the sense that nobody's going to be able to see it or we're trying to keep it secret. I think the idea there is it becomes part of our innermost being. And it's stuck there. And that's going to affect not only the judgments that we make, but also there will be the desire to communicate that information to others. Steve? Okay. Okay. So, right. Store, it's there to draw from, whether we're trying to share that or whether we're trying to draw on it for the value judgments that we make. So, helpful translation. Any other thoughts before we pick up with paragraph 2? Okay. Here he notes that during Jesus' day, there were those who could quote the law of the Lord. But what didn't they do? They didn't live it. They didn't obey what God's word said. It was not a guide for the lives. So Jesus, as he described these people, he says, they're sitting where? They're sitting in Moses' seat. They sat in the place of authority. They were the preachers in that day and time. They may have been some of the finest preachers that the people had. But Jesus said, let me tell you about these people who are teaching God's word. They do what? They say. All right, they can go ahead and tell you what to do. And in some cases, many cases, we might say, they said more than what God had actually said in his law. But they bound heavy burdens on the people. But Jesus also noted that they did not want to do what they said. Well, if, and it's not just true for preachers or elders or a Bible class teacher talking to his or her students, but anytime someone says, do this, and then the teacher, the instructor, fails to do that, what is that person? A hypocrite. You know, you said, here's the standard, but you're not following it. So it is a common problem. Today, we've got that same kind of thing. We talk to people about the Bible, and folks say, oh yes, you know, I'm interested in the Bible. I read the Bible. I can't know for sure, but I wonder a little bit. There was a fella, gave him an Indiana Bible study card, and he studied the card. This was a little over a week ago, and he said, boy, this really looks interesting. I really read the Bible, and he never signed up for the course. And I kind of wonder about that a little bit with people. They say, well, I'm really interested in the scriptures. I really want to know more. And then when you say, well, here it is. Here's a way to do what you're talking about. And then they never follow through. You have to wonder a little bit about what's in the heart of someone. But a lot of people today, they'll say one thing and simply do another. Several times, and it is a scathing rebuke in Matthew 23. We talked about this not all that long ago in the Wednesday night class on Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And Jesus repeatedly, just shortly before he goes to the cross, he calls these people hypocrites. They were acting out of heart, but they were doing it with insincere motives. And then Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6, if you hold your place at Psalm 119. Scott, Proverbs 3, 5 and 6.
Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths.
Okay, let's fill in our blank. Trust in God with how much of your heart?
All.
Well, how well do you think most people do with that command in America? Trust in God with all your heart. I don't think we do it that well. Some, maybe a fair amount, but all thy heart, we rely on too many other things. And then lean not on whose understanding? Your own. How well do you think we do with that? Not too well. The Bible teaches that we're to walk by faith. But most of the time, people prefer to walk by sight. As long as everything seems to be going well, as long as we can make sure that we've got every I dotted, every T crossed, then we think we're in good shape. And we've just become a nation that doesn't want to walk by faith and really trust in God. Then the writer, not willing to leave the point alone, he says, how many ways acknowledge God? All. If we take that thought and apply it in our daily lives, what would that mean? Acknowledge God in all thy ways. Let's break it down and make it practical. How do most days start out for people, the average person? Tomorrow's going to be Thursday. If we all wake up, what's going to happen? Let's break it down from wake up time to noon. All right, most people are going to, you know, get ready for work or the day, whether that's working in the house or working there, working outside the house. All right, they're probably going to eat. So if we take those first two things, how could we acknowledge God in our ways?
Thanks.
All right, I think Thanksgiving would certainly be appropriate. God, we had a night's rest. We've had a house that we've been able to be safe in. There are some people right now that are in a war zone. They don't sleep well at night, you know, sleeping under the beds and on the floors. We've got heat this time of year. Not everybody has heat. Breakfast, there are going to be some people that, if they're lucky, they get one meal a day. So for the night's rest that we've had, for the place that we've had to sleep, for the breakfast food that we have, what else?
Transportation.
All right. When we get ready to go to work or school, wherever that is, transportation, what about the ability to wear some clothes? We don't have to go naked. Be thankful for that? Yeah. God, we, you know, may not have the same wardrobe that some other people have, but we have shoes. And we've got a winter coat. And we've got a hat and gloves for this time of year. So all the little things that we do in life, and oftentimes in the morning hours, people are in a hurry, and it's kind of the hustle and bustle, but literally in all our ways, if we have a job, people are halfway healthy, if we're able to move halfway well to get out, acknowledge these things. All right, sure. When it comes time, a lot of people will say, well, there's not much money left in the checking account. Well, at least you had enough to pay the bills. And Jesus said today's troubles are enough. So, and the ability to go ahead and live in a country like we have and have the resources, power, it's just really abundant as far as blessings. Then the other part of that passage, and he will do what? He's going to direct our paths. To do this, one must have God's word in his heart. So that word's going to spur us on to being things like thankful and appreciative to God. But if that word's not there, then that thankfulness, that appreciation is probably not going to be nearly as pronounced. Anything that you want to touch base on before we pick up with paragraph 3 on page 12? All right. In the third paragraph, he said, now let's return to our psalm, Psalm 119. A careful reading of this chapter, it has 176 verses, will show that most of the verses say something about God's word, either describing it as the word or the law, God's statutes, the commandments, the precepts, the judgments, the truth, or the testimonies. So let's pick up some of these. We'll start with verses 15 and 16. Who wants to be our first reader? All right. Scott, back to you. Psalm 119, 15 and 16.
I will meditate on thy precepts and have respect unto thy ways. I will delight myself in thy statutes. I will not forget thy words.
Let's think about some of the answers that we have. Number one, I will do what on the when it comes to thy precepts? Meditate on them. Can you think about some examples that would involve meditation today? What do people meditate on today, or don't they? Maybe we should define the word meditate. What's it mean to meditate? All right, meditate means to think. To think long and hard on something. What would a person think long and hard on today? Meditate on.
I don't know, when I was in the hospital, I did a lot of meditating on, knowing the fact that without God, I wouldn't be here.
Okay. Meditation sometimes involves our spiritual relationship, religion, if you will, where we are, what we're doing in life. What else? What do people meditate on today? God? Life? What about plans? Think people meditate on plans? They want something. And they say, well, I want, and you can just fill in the blank. And that's what they think about all the time. They wake up thinking about it, they think about it at lunch, think about it at supper, go to bed thinking about it, they dream about it, and it's, I want this particular thing. What else? Think of people meditate on a job, certain job that they want, position in a company. People meditate on a lot of things. And in many cases, the things that they meditate on don't work out all that well. The company may close, the job may not be all that a person wants, they finally get the thing that they possess, life doesn't turn out, but God, he will not disappoint us. So the writer rightly said, I'm going to meditate on thy precepts. I'm really going to give my attention to the scriptures and have respect unto thy ways. And then that next blank that we can fill in from what we heard, I will do what?
Delight.
Delight. You think there are some people who, when it comes to studying the Bible, don't find much delight in it? It's like pulling teeth without Novocaine. It's, we're going to study the scriptures again. We've read that before. What's new? What's exciting? Well, there's some great things in God's word. Delight myself in thy statutes, and then I'm not going to forget thy word. I think a lot of people forget God's word. I'm not going to ask. Preachers can sometimes forget. But, what was preached on last Sunday? What was preached on two Sundays ago? What have we recently learned as far as a Bible reading? There's some people, James talked about that. He said, you look at yourself in the mirror, and then you go away, and the guy forgets what he looks like. We do that with a lot of things in life. There are just so many things that are thrown at us, so many things that are, coming and going. But when it comes to God's word, we may not remember every little thing, but that's why we want to put that deep into the mind, deep into the heart, so as we deal with things, even if we've got just kind of a paraphrase of the verse, we know basically what it says, and we're able to apply it in the right set of circumstances. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with verse 18? Okay, who'd like to read this passage from Psalm 119? Carolyn? Okay, are blank. I may behold what kinds of things? Wondrous things. What would be a wondrous thing in the Bible? Can we come up with a couple examples? A wondrous thing. All right, I think that's pretty impressive. You think about the guards and how the tomb was sealed and the predictions that were made about it, what happened with the disciples, the angels, the big rock that was rolled away. That's impressive stuff. What else? Wondrous things.
Just the beginning of creation.
All right, that was the next thing that kind of sprung to my mind. Creation. Are you kidding me? There was nothing? And everything that we know to exist was made not from a big pile of something, but God simply, he spoke the word and it became pretty powerful. What else? All right, the miraculous manufacturing of food by Jesus. You sit down and you're feeding thousands and thousands of people. Wow, and then there was one other answer.
Jesus' birth.
All right, the birth of Christ. He came to earth as God and man. He grew up in the way that people typically grow up, and the circumstances surrounding the birth. You've got the shepherds in the field. A couple years later, you've got the magi or the wise men showing up. Once again, just a lot of really wonderful information. And all these things, for the most part, are New Testament items. Creation, of course, will go back to the Old Testament. But really some wondrous, wondrous things. At times we've talked about some of the medical laws, or medical verses, if you will, that now reflect some medical truths. Again, it's amazing that God had some information in the Old Testament about sanitation, information in there about things that shouldn't be eaten so the people didn't get sick. The way that he set things up, it really is a marvelous thing. Then verse 21, Psalm 119. Our next helper? Tracy, I saw your hand next.
Thou hast reviewed the proof of my boast have boasted. Proud that are cursed which do err from thy commandments.
Okay, so we have some people, oftentimes they're proud, but there are people who err, they refuse, they wander from God's commandments. If you're in the Sunday morning class on Revelation, in Revelation chapter 9, remember we've divided the chapter into two sections. The people who choose not to live for God, the unrighteous, the unsaved. First part of the chapter describes what kind of consequences, remember? Physical consequences. The second part of the chapter describes spiritual consequences. So John says in the New Testament, the unsaved suffer, and that's precisely what we see in this Old Testament song. Saul, if you are not willing to live for God, especially if you want to be proud, you are going to fare very, very poorly with God. Then verse 34. Steve?
Give me understanding, and I shall keep thy law. Yea, I shall observe it with my whole heart.
Okay. As this writer was looking at his life when it came to spiritual things, he said, God, your law, it needs to be observed with how much of my heart?
Whole heart.
That's God's will. That's being on the Lord's side. Well, you think there were some folks in the Old Testament era who didn't really try to serve God with their whole heart? Mm-hmm. You think that's still true today? Mm-hmm. What would be some examples of that? Half-hearted service to God.
Christians.
All right. You have some people that show up a couple times a year, and usually those times would be Mother's Day, Father's Day, Easter, and Christmas. Those would probably be the big four ones. So we may toss three others in there, Scott, but basically Christmas Christians. So you do have the holiday folks. That's not serving God with the whole heart. What else? Examples of that?
You talk one way to people and yet live a different way.
All right, the hypocrisy that we mentioned from Matthew 23, that's not serving God with a whole heart. That would be another good example. What else? Remember in Matthew 5, Jesus talked about having our light and hiding it? What about the person who says, oh, I want to become a Christian, but I'm not going to let anybody know. I'm just going to kind of keep that to myself. Is that really serving God with their whole heart? That's not going to cut it either. Anything else come to mind as far as an example? Well, what about the person that cracks a Bible a few times a year, a few times a month? Not really serving God with a whole heart either. So we really want to look at our life and make sure that it is going in the way described by the Scriptures. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up point five? Okay. Verses 41 and 42, Psalm 119. Who'd like to be a reader? All right, Carolyn.
Let thy mercies come
Okay, our blanks. So shall I have wherewith to do what? Answer the person that reproaches the believer. And then he says, for I trust in thy word. I read an article the other day from a fellow. He's a preacher. He used to live in our area. Now he's in the area of Florida. I don't know exactly where in the state. I think it's about the middle of the state. But he engaged in a discussion with a college professor. And he's done that over the years fairly frequently. And in this particular discussion, he was reproached by the college professor. The professor was out there, you know, spewing his anti-God and anti-Bible stuff, and you people are a bunch of illiterate, you know, idiots, that kind of thing. And this preacher actually responded in a good way. And when we think about this particular song, psalm, he says, even thy salvation according to thy word, so I shall have wherewith to answer him. Well, the Bible gives us information to answer people who are critical. This particular fella did that, and the guy didn't like it. They had an exchange three or four different times. The preacher said, well, you know, here are a couple questions. Answer the question. The professor saw where those questions would lead and chose not to answer this particular brother. And finally, the preacher said, well, hey, look, you're talking about, you know, God and so forth, and Christians are illiterate folks. At least some of us have heard of Thomas Warren. He's deceased. But does that name ring a bell with some folks? No? Wow. I'm shocked. Thomas Warren had a doctorate, very, very well known in the Brotherhood, was a teacher at some of our graduate schools, taught logic, and engaged in two or three high-profile debates on the existence of God. And there was another fellow he tried to debate, a well-known atheist, and the atheist wouldn't even return his phone call or, you know, send him a letter back to say, hey, I refuse. But it is possible to go ahead and answer the people that reproach us. But if we're going to do that, what do we have to have? God's word has to be, it has to be in the heart. So without that right information, we're not going to do very well. But if we put it in there, it's going to help us. Anything you want to add or ask before we pick up with Psalm 119, verse 54? Scott?
If you want, like, a lot of atheists believe in evolution, there's a thing on YouTube that's called 100 Reasons Why Atheism is Stupid. And it's kind of it's a longer video, so like the points that are made in it are just astounding. Mm-hmm. Things, because this guy used to be a scientist.
Yeah, it is. We have Discovery here. It's that little magazine that we set out about every 6 weeks for our kids. But if you've not looked through that as an adult, you might check that out from time to time. There is some very, very interesting information in there as far as things from our world. And you just start looking at that, and it's just like, how can evolution possibly be true? Everything has been put together in such a marvelous, perfect way that it demands a designer. All right, verse 54. Who'd like to be your helper now? Lois?
Thy statutes have been my songs in the house of my pilgrimage.
Okay. Our blank says the statutes. So, statutes, God's law, such a joy that they are compared here to songs as we go through life. Then verse 80. All right. Scott, back to you. Okay, last blank is, I don't want to be ashamed. And the way that we're going to accomplish that, my heart needs to be sound. Well, that might seem like that's kind of an odd word. So what's he mean? Let my heart be sound. All right, I think full of his word. We might add this. Someone says, you are of sound mind. You have that when you're going to make up a will. You're of sound mind. What are we saying? All right, you know what you're doing. In this particular case, there's nothing blameworthy about the mind. There's nothing defective. So when we think about God's word, we want it to be blameworthy. We want it to be sound. We want it to be whole. We want it to be complete. And if that's true, then of course there's not going to be any shame associated with that. We're willing to be examined by men and by God. Verse 89. Carol?
Forever, O Lord, thy word is settled in heaven.
Okay. This is maybe one of the more famous verses from this particular psalm, and it's so famous that Fried Hartman, Christian University, based a whole lectureship on it a few years ago. What's he mean Your word's been settled in heaven. Parent says to a child, this has been settled. Or an employer says to an employee, this has been settled. All right, this is the way it is. We're not going to change it. Now think about the implications of this point. God says his word has been settled. This is it. If this statement is true, what does that mean?
The final word.
Okay. So then the person who comes along and says, well, God can do whatever he wants. If people didn't become a Christian alive, God can save them anyway. That's a problem, isn't it?
God can do whatever he wants within his own law.
Yeah, within those statutes that he's given. So if his statutes say you've got to do this and this and this to become a Christian, and you don't do that, guess what? No hope. You're out of luck. You're out of luck. Why? Because God's word has been settled in heaven. So if you pick up nothing else from this particular class, take home Psalm 119, verse 89. God's word has been settled in heaven. And the next time someone says, well, God can do whatever he wants. Now, what do you mean by that? Do you mean that he can somehow violate or go against his word? Well, he can do whatever. No, he can't do whatever he wants if that is somehow inconsistent with the scriptures. Anything that you want to touch base on as far as that point, Scott? Okay, and there's a reason for that. The word has been settled. So as far as modifying it in some way, God says no. Verse 93, Steve?
I will never forget thy precepts.
That's right.
Technology bomb.
Okay. They talk about senior moments. We should say we have tech moments sometimes.
Yeah,
because
that's
yeah. All right, first blank, I'm never going to forget thy precepts. Well, wouldn't that be great if we never forgot the information that we needed from the scriptures, but we are human. So how are we going to put ourselves in a position, what can we do to make sure that we are always mindful we never forget God's precepts?
Study.
All right, study. We're going to have to keep, I mean, it's kind of like the belly. It would be great if you could just eat one Thanksgiving meal and you never had to eat again. But, you know, it doesn't work like that. Generally, day by day, we need to go ahead and continue to eat so the body can continue to stay strong and continue to work. The same is true for spiritual things. So the chances that we have to learn more about God's Word, and we have a lot of different ways to do this kind of thing in our society, we want to make sure that we never forget God's precepts because they are going to be the thing that leads to life. And then he says, for with them you have done what? You've quickened me. Well, here again is a passage where I think it is so significant when we look at our Word. When we look at our world, people today will talk about a religious experience. I felt this, or I dreamed this, or I saw this. That's not what we find in the scriptures. What's quickened people? What's given them life? What energized them?
The version I have says, for by them you have given thee life.
Okay, and that's the idea. You know, we say this has been, we're quickened from the dead, we're brought back, we're given life.
Revived.
Sure, that would be a great statement. And a lot of people are dismissive of God's word, and they say, well, you know, I had this instead. Hey, wait a minute. This is the procedure that God has set up. True for the Old Testament, true for the New. Anything that you want to touch base on? Okay, verse 97, same song. All right, Tracy?
Oh, how loved I thy law. It is my meditation all day.
Okay. Our first blank, oh, how love I thy law, and then it is my
meditation.
What do people love today? Person says, I love this. Well, what do they mean? What are they talking about?
Money.
All right, they love money. So what do they do with the money they love?
All right,
we had a couple of answers. I'll start on my left. They buy things. That might be one thing that a person does. If he loves money, he might not want to buy something if he loves it too much. But sometimes people have enough where they're going to go ahead and say, I'm going to spend some time with it, and I'm going to spend it. What else?
Save it.
All right, if they love it, they're going to treasure it up somehow. Maybe they'll buy something that will allow them to be mindful of it, or they're going to save it. What else? Things people love. Examples of something that a person loves. All right, there's one. If we think in terms of non-material things. And if a person loves a child, husband, wife, other family member? What's he or she do? How do you show that love?
Treat them well.
Show them.
Treat them.
All right. You're going to treat that person well?
With your needs above your own.
All right. The needs are going to be above your own? What else? Maybe we should talk about love in a Bible class. Treat them well. Needs above your own. What else? Attention is going to be given to them on a regular basis, right? We would expect daily, maybe several times a day. So when the writer says, "Oh, I love thy law," what does that word love tell us? Here's the guy who says, "I love the Bible. I'll get it out in a week." That can't be the kind of attitude that we have. There's got to be that study. There's got to be that willingness. Remember what Jesus said in Matthew 4? Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word. Every word to me, God, is precious. Every word is going to be significant. Now, I don't know about you, I read a lot of stuff. And in a lot of the material that I look at, every word is not that important to me. If I treasured every word, I'd never get anything done. But when it comes to the Scriptures, every word needs to be something that's very, very important to us. Okay, then we come up with verse 105, number 11. Betty?
Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path.
Okay, there are times in life where we want a light, or we need a light. And God says, this is how you can understand, how I view the Scriptures. It is your guide for life, especially when you go through some difficult times. Verses 127 and 128. Scott? Or Julie, we'll take you.
Therefore, I love my commandments above gold, yea, above fine gold. Therefore, I esteem all thy precepts concerning all things to be right, and I hate every false way.
Now, these two verses are amazing when we think about our day and time. Let's look carefully at what was read and what we have in the book. Therefore, I love thy commandments above, or your commandments are superior to gold. That's not how a lot of people would view the Scriptures today. You want the Bible, you want some gold. A lot of people would say, give me the precious metal. Give me the gold. And then he says, yea, even above fine gold. You know, if it was 10 karat gold, most people would say, give me the 10 karat. But you know, if it's 24 karat, what do you think people would say? Where is it? You know, we're going to do anything that we can to go ahead and get that. And people today, as we look at what they are willing to do, you know, I'm thinking Virginia was talking about on the way in, what's happened to her former house. You see people today got an air conditioning unit out there. People go and strip out the metal from it, or go into a house and try to, strip out copper or, something else that's of value. And, I mean, to them that's valuable. Not nearly as valuable as gold. You're going to have to buy a lot of copper to go ahead and come up with the value of even an ounce of gold. But here, the writer, gold was still very, very valuable in his day and time. Fine gold, especially valuable. But he said, when it comes to your word, it might be interesting. And we're not going to ask that you do this in class, but go back to your house this week. And looking at things, not people, I'm not talking about trading in the kids or trading in the spouse, but go through the house and look at the items that you treasure the most. There should be at least a couple of things that, in your house you really like. Maybe it's a memento from a family member. Maybe it's your car. Maybe it was a gift from someone that was really close to you. And you, if you want a different illustration of it, think that there's going to come, the house is going to burn down, or there's going to be an earthquake, or there's going to be a tornado. And you can only grab a couple of items. What would those items be? Most of us, I think, could come up with an answer without too much work. And then say, here is the item or two that I really treasure. And here's God's word. How do I value the two? Which one is really more valuable to me if I had to make a choice? Yeah, and that's right. We might like them, the memories that they represent. They could be valuable. It could be a gold ring or something like that. Could be a coin set, whatever it happens to be. But if we put it in maybe those terms, we can better appreciate the point. Then he draws a conclusion in the latter part of what was read. Therefore, I esteem all thy precepts concerning all things to be right, and I hate every false way. Well, that's a point for us of Christian maturity. You think a lot of people who are Christians hate every false way? I suspect that that's probably correct. That they would say, well, there's a lot of stuff out there. Murdering people? Okay, I'm on board with that. And robbing the bank? I'm on board with that. And you can, you know, to go out and just get, you know, rip-roaring drunk? Okay. And, you know, this, that, homosexuality, you know, all these kinds of things? Okay, we're supportive of that. But every false way? That requires some growth. It really does. But what makes that growth possible and a lot easier? You put that word in the heart. And as that word continues to grow, as we continue to study, the desire for right increases, the desire for wrong decreases. So if you will look at some people who are generally the finest folks that we have in the church, and that usually comes, I think, after a person has been a Christian 30, 40, 50, 60 years. Sherman, in the announcements a while back, asked people to stand up here who had been Christians for a long time. And when you find folks who have really tried to live according to the Bible, to learn, to read, to study, to apply it throughout life, they've typically gotten, if not to that point, pretty close to that point, where they are able to look at life and say, these things are right, we like these things are wrong, and these things you know, do not interest us, they're not a huge temptation, if a temptation at all. And that needs to be the kind of goal that we're working for as we go through life. Anything you want to add or ask before we look at point 13? Scott? Virginia, we'll take your hand first. Well,
I thought that was so sad.
It is. Yeah. And if you live that life, you're going to reduce the false ways that you'd want to be involved with, but still, it doesn't get you anywhere close to the Christian life. And, you know, in eternity, it certainly doesn't help you. But there are a lot of people that make that choice. We've, Teresa and I, and, you know, others here, have known some really fine people over the years. But it goes
and
back.
Yeah.
No, there are, from our point of view, some really, really good folks. But God says that's not the standard that we're going to be judged by. Scott, did you have a thought?
Yeah, there was a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of false ways now that are being made to look okay, like Scientology and things like that.
Yeah, and that's been something that has happened throughout the ages. The Old Testament prophets, if you go back and you look at a lot of what they said, people were calling good evil, and they were saying that evil was good. And the prophets didn't cotton to that very much. Well, certainly God didn't either. And today, when you look at our society, it's the same kind of thing. Society has tried to flip some things around. Things that the Bible would condemn as evil, society says, well, hey, this is good, this is right. Why would you oppose this? You need to be more tolerant and loving and accepting. And then the opposite is also true. But once again, there are times in life where that is a huge, huge issue. Okay, verses 29, 129 and 130. Somebody prepared for those? All right, Carolyn. Okay, our blanks, our testimonies are wonderful. We've already seen this particular point. So because they're good, because they're a delight, my soul wants to keep them. Generally, if something is enjoyable, if it's pleasurable, if it's good, people say, hey, we're interested in that. And this is true of God's word. The entrance of thy words gives light, just like we saw earlier as far as the lamp mentioned a few points back. Don't remember where that was. Yeah, verse 105. And then he says, it gives what to the simple?
Understanding.
Understanding. One of the greatest lies that the devil has ever communicated to people is that the Bible can't be understood. It can. It can. But people, I think sometimes they just would prefer to stick according to the way that they've been raised or their beliefs and say, well, it's just too complicated to understand. But you know, if somebody said, well, hey, you could have fine gold, but it's really tough. Only a few people are smart enough to understand how you can get it for free. You think most people would just sit down and say, oh, okay, I'm too dumb. I don't think that's what they'd say. What would they say? I'll study. You tell me what's required to get the fine gold for free, and I'll do it. I'll be there. I'll take a day off work. I'll take a week off work. I will give you whatever is necessary. So the idea that, well, it's just too hard, that just doesn't square real well when we look at real life. Anything you want to add to us before we pick up with our next reference? Okay, let's then look at verse 140. Psalm 119, 140. Kina?
Thy word is very pure, therefore thy servant loveth it.
Okay, when we think about some information related to this passage, thy word is very pure. How can we illustrate that? Your word's pure. All right. When we think about, right, purity sometimes comes in different forms. I've used this illustration before, but when we lived in Fort Wayne, there was a cookie company. Fig Newtons were being made. And, you know, you've got the production facility in the summer months with the windows open. Well, what do you think's going to happen? You're going to get some stuff in your Fig Newtons. And I like them. I still eat them, but I still think about Fort Wayne when I eat my Fig Newtons. But you just never know kind of what's there in that brown stuff. But you know, they weren't, as far as the purity, they weren't so impure that you would say, well, they're bad, they're going to make you sick. But at the same time, as far as saying the product is absolutely pure, there's no way I would have made that particular statement. But when we think about God's Word, it is absolutely pure. There's nothing impure about it. What else as far as an example of the purity? All right. I think that would be another thing. A person will say, well, this is true generally, or it's, you know, fairly problem-free, but God says he's put out his word where it's perfect, no contradictions. Purity as far as the moral standard on how to treat people, pure as far as who's going to go to heaven, who's not, so perfect in this particular respect. 160, who wants to pick up? All right, Steve, and then Betty, we'll ask you to pick up verse 172.
The sum of thy word is truth. Every one of the righteous ordinances endureth forever.
Okay, two basic points here. Whatever part of the Bible you go to, you know, every once in a while we'll call out, or I'll call out a Bible reference, and we look at the passage, and I must have looked at it wrong, or whatever, and it turns out not to be the correct reference. Teachers sometimes get it wrong. Parents sometimes get it wrong. Everybody sometimes gets it wrong. But God says the sum, the total of my word is truth. So whether you look at Genesis, or whether you're looking at Revelation, or some passage in between, God says this is information that you can always rely on. Now, there are some cases where we have some lies in the Bible, do we not? Do we not have some lies in the Bible? Didn't Satan lie when he talked to Adam and Eve? Or talked to Eve? Yeah. Lies in that sense, that the lie is recorded. It's not a lie from God, but... A couple folks look tired. I just thought I'd wake you up. But thy word is true. True in every single respect. And then the end of it, and every one of thy righteous judgments endures how long?
Forever.
So sometimes with people we make a promise, or we have a promise made to us, and it endures for a while, maybe a long time. But in a lot of cases, those promises are broken, they're not kept, but God says the promises that come from me, they are absolutely reliable. Betty, if you'll pick up 172, that'll be where we stop tonight. Okay, not only is God's word pure, not only is it always true, but it is also righteous. Sometimes people can be right most or all the time, but they are not righteous.